Everyone, thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. You're listening to episode 57 of Postmodern Realities, and I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. On this episode, I'm joined by Megan Alman. Megan is a national speaker and writer in the area of pro-life apologetics with Life Training Institute. She earned a BA in journalism with a concentration in magazines from the University of Georgia and holds an MA in Christian apologetics from Biola University. Megan has written our forthcoming Volume 41, Number 1 cover article on the Hulu television series, The Handmaid's Tale. Her article is called Seeing Red, The Handmaid's Tale, Human Dignity and Hope. Megan, it's good to have you on.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Well, The Handmaid's Tale has become quite a cultural phenomenon. This TV series on Hulu is actually based on the 1985 novel, which has the same name, The Handmaid's Tale, by Margaret Atwood, and it has just been so highly regarded. It's won some Emmy Awards, and it's also won some Golden Globe Awards, and critics have raved about this. So we felt like we wanted to cover this particular, you know, show, and originally, like I said, based on the book. So how did you hear about The Handmaid's Tale, both the book and the show?
Yeah, it's a great question. I heard about it from a friend, actually, a good friend who she actually called me because she had been in a conversation with her sister, and her sister had brought up this television show and was just raving about it. And my friend, whose views tend to be much more conservative than her sister's, ended up just asking me, what do you think about it? And I had no idea what she was talking about. I'd not heard of the book or the show at that point, and so that was my first introduction to it. So when the opportunity came up for me to write the article, it gave me the perfect chance to kind of investigate all of this and find out a little bit more about it. So as I began that process, it started showing up everywhere, and I started seeing, you know, pictures of these women in red nun habits from news articles, kind of protests around the country, and all of a sudden there it was, for me anyway.
Well, I'd like to have you tell our listeners a little bit about the story and why the TV show is so popular right now. I feel like there's just been a lot in our culture. I'm writing from the editor in this particular issue, and I'm just kind of talking about just some of the issues regarding women, some of women's issues that have been really in the forefront, especially in 2017. And I do want to tell the listeners, I did last summer watch the entire TV series on Hulu, and I read the book as well. And I'm surprised that I didn't actually read the book in college, because it is well regarded. The book, the novel is also, but that was the first time I had read it. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the story?
Sure. Likewise, I wish I had read the book earlier too. Now, the story takes place, well, Margaret Atwood wrote the book in the mid-80s, but the television show actually takes place in our day and time, and the show's writer, Bruce Miller, did that for, you know, particular reasons. He wanted it to be very relatable to his audience. So in the show, what has happened is what was America is no longer. And all that exists now is basically the section that we would know as New England. And everything else has kind of been destroyed off by environmental toxins and wastes and this particularly violent faction of essentially rabid Christian fundamentalists, although I wouldn't call them Christian. They're so-called. Christian fundamentalists have overtaken the government in this violent coup and have kind of taken over society and reordered it completely in an effort to kind of cleanse it in their own way. So what's happened is that the men are ruling society, and the women have lost all rights, essentially. Infertility, because of the environmental toxins that have kind of destroyed everything else, is at an all-time high, and so children are disappearing. They're not being born. And so in this new society, the women don't have the right to read. They don't have the right to own property, to manage money. And ultimately, those that are still fertile, and those are the handmaids, have kind of lost all right to their own bodies, which is really one of the big messages that I think Atwood was trying to get across, that once that right is taken away, other things really dwindle. It kind of goes from there. There's this new order in society, and the handmaids are forced to live in households with the people in power. The men are called the commanders, and then they have their wives. And the handmaids serve as surrogates, essentially, bearing children for the commanders' families.
So why do you think the TV show in particular has become so popular right now in our culture?
Yeah. Given the climate for the last year or so, a lot of it surrounding the recent election, I guess the tension is at an all-time high when it comes to particularly views on things like women's rights. And in my field, I talk a lot about the issue of abortion. So when that comes up, we have those who it's kind of politically divided, that unfortunately in this polarized society, when you have views on one side of the scale are viewed as, oh, these are the pro-life people and this is what they want to do. And on the other side of the scale, it's viewed as more liberal and, people are afraid. And I think that, with the new president being in power, with a more of a conservative mindset, and there being a lot of talk about reversing Roe versus Wade and big changes on the horizon as far as abortion is concerned, I think people are feeling threatened, particularly what will happen to women's rights if we take the right to a woman's body away, is the mindset. So this show really came at a very timely moment, and people have fallen in love with Offred, the main character, that's her name, and they're looking to her as this champion of women's rights, rebelling against this really oppressive society.
Well, a lot of people, you're just talking about just the cultural climate right now, and a lot of people think the show is prophetic. Do you think that is prophetic? You mentioned that you've seen in the news kind of a lot of these images and so forth.
Right. Even when the show won several of the awards that it recently won, I think some of the comments that were made afterwards says we're no longer making fiction, we're making a documentary. So in other words, many have championed the show as this message of this is where we're heading. And I think that given some of the themes in the show, it may very well be prophetic in a way, but I think it much more aptly describes in many ways where we already are, not where we're going. And the reasons that we're there have very little to do with any kind of conservative regime or what the show takes and paints as Christianity, but rather some other ideas. It's coming from other places. In the article, the three main things that I mention are ideas that come from a secular feminism, ideas that come from a society that champions abortion rights, and ideas that come from really just a society that is functional in the way that it views how human beings are valuable. It's functional value. Sexual freedom has become kind of the central point, and everything that's flowing from that is leading to a society that looks very much like Gilead, but not for the reasons that the show claims.
Right. In her novel and also in the show, which really hews very closely to Atwood's novel, at least the first season does, and the second season is coming out in April 2018. And that is there's this dystopian world that was formerly, I guess, America, and it is called Gilead, as you mentioned. So are there any similarities that you would see between this fictional dystopian Gilead and America today?
Gilead is, as I said before, a functional society. Now that these sons of Jacob, which is what this ruling class calls itself, has taken over, the society is divided into very strict castes according to function. So everyone kind of plays their part. They serve as instruments, and it begins even looking at the women in particular, because they are probably the most segmented in the society. You have the wives who are at the top, and actually everything's classified by color, interestingly enough. The wives wear blue, and they kind of serve as decorations in the commander's households, more or less, because they don't read or you know, own property or work. Below the wives, you have kind of what they call the econo-wives, wear striped clothing. The Marthas, which is from the biblical Martha, who, you know, was very busy in the story of Mary and Martha, are the ones who do the domestic chores. They run the households, and they sweep and dust and clean and cook. And then at the very bottom rung of the society are the handmaids. They wear red. It's a very Hester Prynne-like twist, I think, on the story, you know, red being a color that reminds us of seduction, and also a bullseye, as, interestingly enough. They're kind of the most hated in society, but also, in a way, the most important, because they're the last fertile women. So they are, you know, at the same time that they're put at the lowest rung on the ladder, they're revered for the fact that they can bear children. So yeah, the society is really, really divided in this way. And our society is also a very functional society in the same kind of way. With the things that I mentioned before, even the existence of secular feminism kind of points to a society divided by function. Abortion, certainly, at its very heart, is a system that says that some human beings matter more than others, largely based on function. So, I think there are a lot of similarities between the two worlds, when we get to the bottom of it, especially dealing with the way we look at what it means to be human and valuable.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Megan Allman, and Megan has written our forthcoming cover article for Volume 41, Number 1, and it's on The Handmaid's Tale. And her article is called Seeing Red, The Handmaid's Tale, Human Dignity and Hope. And to read this article in Volume 41, Number 1, which is forthcoming, please subscribe to the journal. And for the month of January, we're having a special subscription rate, and it's $25. And normally a 6-issue subscription is $39.50, so there's only a few more days of January left. We're recording this on January 25th, 2018. So please go online and subscribe at equip.org. You were just talking to us, kind of describing to us a little bit about the functional value system in Gilead, with all these different women with different, you know, assigned different roles according to what their society thought was valuable. And you kind of mentioned that secular feminism in our time in America now has contributed to our own functional value system. And how has it done so?
Right. It's good. Generally speaking, because it's not entirely, there's so many factors involved, but generally speaking, when you look at secular feminism, and I'm certainly not an expert in that area, but I have studied it to some degree, and when you look at it and see what it does, it really makes a mistake by not understanding the difference between what we would call attributed value, which is kind of, I've been using the term functional value, and intrinsic value, which is the idea that we are valuable in light of our human nature, and that's it. So in a system like that, you can't really fully ground or explain why people or women who are at the top of their fields are to be valued in the same way as women who are not in the workforce or women who choose to stay home and be mothers. A system like that can't fully explain why they deserve the same basic rights. So even if you look at some of the feminist writings that are well known, Betty Friedan is one, for example, in The Feminine Mystique. Even in that book, she can't help but attach human worth to kind of an ability. And in her case, a lot of it had to do with a woman's ability to earn wages or to earn a paycheck. So that kind of turns everything on its head. And even more radical feminists during that time would have called women who chose to stay home kind of leeches to society. So under that kind of system, it's really hard to understand that all women and all people, for that matter, are intrinsically valuable, not in light of what they can do or what they contribute to society, but just in light of what they are.
I remember when I read The Feminine Mystique in college, I had taken a women's studies class, and just the way that Betty Friedan talked about, especially specifically the housewife, in that book she describes the housewife as akin to a Nazi concentration camp victim. So it's very much about the value of what she's doing. So if someone is doing housework, that is what they're like. They're like this automaton who doesn't have any feelings or thoughts or anything because she's enslaved by the very work that she's doing. So I thought that was just very interesting that how she did describe that. And you're right. It's very much her value and her worth depended on what kinds of things she could do. And if she could be freed from certain tasks, then she would be more valued. Tell us a little bit about how also you mentioned abortion, and currently abortion on demand in our society, how does that factor into a functional value system?
Definitely. And even just to back up a little bit to what you said, you know, just that idea, even as women are trying to achieve, and I have no problem clearly with women working. I'm a woman who has a career myself. But if they're trying to achieve workforce status just to gain status and value, the intentions have to be called into question there. And what doesn't go away are the responsibilities that are still there to raise another generation. Certainly that falls on both women and men. But as women kind of vacate those roles in the home, as it were, others have to step in and fill those roles. And in most cases, it is women who do that, other women. So inadvertently, we've created this caste system of our own between women who, you know, kind of are viewed as those with status at the top of the workforce and women who step into the positions of childcare, which is kind of a lower paid job, unfortunately, and you know, housemaids and all of that. So even just as a result of that, what we see in our society is women, in order to try and gain the status and achieve things career-wise, are putting off having children. Now, that's not all bad, but what happens for a lot of women is that when they come to the point where they finally say, man, I want to have a baby, oftentimes they've waited too long. So that's kind of created this world where, and I even quoted some statistics in the article, where even between 1970 and 2015, which is the study that I found was done in 2015, the average age that a woman had her first child went up from the age of 21 to the age of 30. So this society, this abortion on demand society, kind of comes out of this view of children as commodities. And what I was just talking about is kind of the flip side of the coin, because infertility is something that causes an immense amount of pain for so many people. So I don't want to make light of that. But the answers that we've come up with in an effort to have children when we've made it kind of more difficult to do so really crosses some moral boundaries. There's a whole field of artificial reproductive technologies that is kind of barreling down the track in many ways unchecked. So in that sense, children have become something that you purchase at a price. So on the flip side of that, when children are commodities, they can be disposed of as well. And abortion on demand is that kind of thing that looks at it and says that these unborn children are not people of worth, and that a woman can define when what that is within her and whether or not it has value, and she can do away with it as she chooses. Abortion is another form of functional value in our society that's problematic, where some human beings are kind of being discounted based on function.
We were talking about earlier just about feminism and its secular feminism and its contribution to just a functional value system in America today. And does part of the goals of secular feminism was sexual liberation for women, going all the way back, of course, to Margaret Sanger and Planned Parenthood. But is there somehow this whole issue of the sexual freedom that women have now, how does that play out in this idea of this functional value system that we have?
Yeah. This right to unlimited abortion on demand, which is kind of where we are, it does come from this idea that we should be able to have sex without consequences. So sexual freedom more and more has kind of become a central point in our society. And we can see that in, from a number of different ways. You know, we have a multi-billion dollar pornography industry that has kind of taken things over and is causing such damage. And even in an industry like that, women in large part, but also men, have been just reduced to these things that are objects of pleasure. So, you know, when we say that we can do what we want with our bodies without consequence, people get hurt. And we see that, that many in this case are belittled to mere commodities. We also with sexual freedom kind of keep on going down the track. And what we're seeing today is even the idea of gender fluidity, that gender is just this construct that we get to define for ourselves. And, you know, that idea is going to have major consequences are already showing up as we see that what it means to be a man or what it means to be a woman is no longer something that's concrete and understandable, but something that's very fluid, apparently, which is going to take an interesting turn, I think, because in a world like that, you know, being a woman might not be a real thing much longer. Women are kind of being defined right out of existence as are men, and it is kind of up to whoever is holding the microphone at that point. I think in the article I really talked about thinkers like C.S. Lewis, who when he wrote The Abolition of Man, you know, he spoke to these very things when he talked about the last part of nature that we're going to conquer is really our human nature. And when we conquer that, the war will have been won, but who will have won it? I think that's very telling to a time that we're facing now.
You know, what's interesting is just in thinking about sexual freedom, and of course, you know, this topic isn't covered in this particular issue of the journal or your article, but just we were talking about just all the issues that came up with women in 2017, and one of the biggest ones was sexual assault and sexual harassment. And that's interesting because when we have sex on demand, as we do, and sexual freedom, so-called sexual freedom that people are pursuing, especially like you're talking about the multi-billion dollar pornography industry, people start viewing other people, whether men or women, as objects for their own pleasure, for their self-gratification. And therefore, it's so different from Christianity because you mentioned in the article just the fact that women are valuable in and of who they are because they are created in the image of God. And when people are reduced to just, especially in pornography, where it's just, there's just no sense of, it's just all about self-gratification in all these different ways, then I sometimes wonder if just the sexual freedom, if people have realized what it's been reduced to, and then they feel really trapped by some of the situations that they're put in with assault and so forth, which is horrific and awful. But I just wonder if people have thought about the consequences, like you were saying, of certain things, abortion on demand and pornography. Anyway, that's another conversation we can have just on that. But I totally agree with you about this idolization of sexual freedom has caused other things that we've caused us to not value human beings for who they are.
At the same time that we are, you know, the viewers are railing against this society that Offred finds herself in Gilead. Like you said, we're kind of overlooking the ways in our own society reflects that, and the fact that ideas have real world consequences. And you know, in some part, human beings have created, in some way, this problem. Not individuals per se, but our wishes to achieve some things have had these consequences. So yeah,
I was thinking about, you know, just in reading the book and watching the series. There's, you know, the Gilead is this dystopian world, and all this horrible things have happened. And I think, you know, Margaret Atwood did a brilliant job in just recreating it. I will say, if anyone watches it, it is affecting. I mean, if you feel like you're entering into this particular society, but it does seem like there's issues of dignity and justice and wanting to be known and understood that come up as themes in the book. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the movie, I mean, and the TV series too, yeah. Not just the book.
Certainly, the TV series. I think that's what people really connect with. What they connect with there, and you can't really help it if you watch it. Now, the show itself, I don't know if I could endorse it for everyone. It is difficult to watch, and it's certainly kind of, I don't know, one of those shows you might not watch in polite company because of some of the content. But what really has people hooked to it is the character. I mean, Offred just will not give in to this terrible world. And it is a grotesque world. And she is fighting. She is fighting to maintain who she is. And she's fighting to rescue her daughter who was taken from her and to kind of recover her past life that was stolen from her. So really every good story that's out there has these undertones that are Christian at their very core. I think people are kind of gripped by the way that Offred is fighting to maintain her identity and to not go insane, really. But also they love that Offred sees so clearly the injustice of this world. And I keep saying her name a lot because the show is told from her perspective. We have a lot of access to her inner thought life that we don't have with the other characters. But you just see, you see the injustice, you see that she sees it and you want to fight back with her and say, no, justice needs to be served here. This cannot go on. We can't help but see that there are some good things in the story. And I really think that those things are ultimately what draw people to it. But those things, justice and the search for identity, are ultimately, answered best by a Christian worldview.
Well, this, it's both in the book and in the television series. I just want to tell our listeners that Margaret Atwood tries to show how these women are stripped of their very identity, even in their names. And she's called Offred because the home in which she lives, that commander, that ruler, his name is Fred. So it's like she is a possession of Fred, and she is her true name is no longer known, and she's known because she's like a possession of this man. And you did tell us a few times that really this isn't, they're saying it's a so-called Christian theocracy, but it's really a warped view of what true Christianity is all about. And so what does true biblical Christianity have? Does it have anything relevant to say about The Handmaid's Tale?
Absolutely. It has a lot to say about The Handmaid's Tale and things like it, because just as I was saying before, when we see things like human dignity, we see these injustices, and we want to have something to hope for, Christianity answers that. I mean, ultimately, Christianity is the greatest story ever told. Happens to be a true story, I think, objectively so. That's a different kind of conversation too for a different day. But the way that it answers this is that we can't get Gilead from Christianity in the way that the book kind of makes those who are unfamiliar with Christianity think that we can, because Christianity recognizes that human beings have these attributed value things. We are certainly diverse in our abilities and in our traits, but ultimately human beings are equal, because we share this intrinsic worth, this dignity that comes from our very nature. In fact, it comes from, and this is page one of our Bibles, I guess page two if you have a study Bible because of all the notes at the bottom. But in Genesis chapter 1, that God created man in his own image, male and female, he created them. Men and women created in the image of God, women as a necessary part of the creation, not like an afterthought. So this underlying dignity that we have is grounded in the Imago Dei, and Christianity is what provides that answer. Not only that, nobody can take that away from human beings, because it wasn't created by us. It was given to us by God. So we can't even give it away. It's just something that is already ours. Christianity ultimately grounds where we, that longing that we search for to say, who am I and do I matter? And it tells you are indeed human and you're made in the image of God and you matter ultimately for that reason. Not only that, but when it comes to justice, you know, Christianity grounds that as well. We all recognize that there's something wrong in the world, just as Offred and, you know, those who are kind of on her side, more or less, in Gilead recognize there's something very wrong in this society. And so we want justice. We have this sense within us, kind of this innate understanding that things are not right and should be made right. And that comes from the world's brokenness. Christianity explains that. It explains it in the fall. It explains it in the fact that creation was broken when the fall happened, and that God, in his justice, is making things right. You know, ultimately, he did that by sending Jesus into the world as our rescuer. He did that through the gospel of Christ. And when that happened, God's sense of justice was satisfied, and he satisfied it himself. It was the only way that it could be done, because we could not attain righteousness on our own, and we needed him to help us do that. So ultimately, our longing for justice is answered in God. I think the thing that we forget when it comes to looking at Christianity and going, and dismissing it, as many people do, is that when it comes to justice in a world like ours, every single one of us is deserving of justice, because we've all done things that are wrong. And that's where the gospel is such good news, because Jesus does take that punishment, or that what would make the scale tip back to balance, on himself, on our behalf. And he offers that grace that he has earned for us, that grace that comes from him. He offers it to us freely.
Well, do you have any final thoughts on how to use this show as an apologetic springboard to engage with others?
Mm-hmm. Well, I found that already it's been wonderful to be able to do that as I've kind of dug into the show and dug into thinking about it. And it's really because of those things that even a show as, you know, even a world as terrible as Gilead can't snuff out, and just really what we've just been talking about. The idea that we are all human beings of intrinsic value, of unspeakable dignity and worth. The idea that justice is coming, justice will be served. The idea that grace is available to those who are hurting, to those who feel hopeless. There is real hope and real reasons to believe that hope is real and true. So I think as you talk to people who are fans of the show, who maybe are looking at it from a little bit of a different perspective, to get in touch with the things that they truly love about the show and begin to make those connections between those things and what Christianity has to offer. Because ultimately, the good things in every story, you know, love and hope and dignity and worth and justice and these glimmerings of just light in dark places, they come from Christianity. They're inherently Christian things. And if we can make those connections for people, it works as a wonderful apologetic to kind of answer the longings that they have within them.
Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for Megan. Okay. So, Megan, you live in Georgia, so sweet tea or biscuits?
Yes. No. I guess it depends on the time of day.
Okay, are you a morning person or a night owl?
More of a morning person.
And if you have an hour of free time, how do you like to pass the time?
Sitting down and reading without interruption.
And is there anything new that you learned in the past week?
Yes, I learned some new things about the state of Colorado because my daughter's working on a project about Colorado because our family is getting ready to relocate there.
Wow, that is exciting. Yeah. Well, thanks, Megan, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you for having me, Melanie. It's been fun.
Today's guest is Megan Almon. Megan has written our forthcoming cover article for Volume 41, Number 1 on The Handmaid's Tale, and her article is called Seeing Red, The Handmaid's Tale, Human Dignity and Hope. To read this article, please subscribe to the journal, and for the month of January 2018, we have a special subscription rate of $25. Normally, a 6-issue subscription is $39.50, so to subscribe online, visit equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. and follow the Bible Answer Man on Instagram, and please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, and we'd love it if you'd rate and review our podcast. Also, please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast hosted by CRI President Hank Canagrath, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Hank is also streaming live each week on Facebook and YouTube, so check equip.org for dates and times. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's new audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.